Once you come back out into the main room dressed in your Green Man costume, Mercury declares, "Now we may begin the order of business. To my left is..." He stops, checks himself, does a half turn as he realizes you're on the opposite side of the table as you were supposed to be. "To my right is Captain Gwei." He motions to the large turtle man.
"Interesting name. Is that an alias or a given name?"
He goes to shake your hand. "It's more of a nickname. It's butchered Chinese for tortoise. Of course, I am not natively Chinese. My father was Chinese. I am an Iranian national."
"Strange. I wouldn't place your accent as Iranian."
"Well, I grew up in Russia, so natively my accent is Russian, though I speak fluent English."
"Then I take it your mother was Iranian?"
"No, my mother was North Korean."
"Oh."
Mercury steps in and says, "Yes, my dear friend Captain Gwei here has connections to Cuba, the Taliban, and numerous Latin American drug cartels. He's one of my most reliable sources of things the government doesn't want me to have."
"That's quite a pedigree."
Gwei says, "I had a difficult childhood. My mother was very surprised to give birth to a tortoise."
"In her non-native country of Iran, no less."
"It's quite the story. Would you like to hear?" Before you can answer, Mercury throws out a hand. "No, Captain Gwei! It's not that good of a story. At least not the way that you tell it. I've sat through it once and have no desire to suffer again. I'm introducing you because you have proven yourself valuable and independently capable. Should you ever have grand intentions of destruction again, you need merely inform our captain, and he will procure whatever you need. Indeed, as we rise to our apex and unstoppable industry sinks into their nadir, even now he prepares to secure for our organization advanced weapons systems which will give pause to the U.S. military. Surface-to-air missile systems to begin with. Attack drones soon afterward. Once Luna is safely in our control, they will find it difficult indeed to wrest this city away from us. That, Mr. Green, is why I am so eager and pleased to hear your report."
"To begin, I must fail your happiness by taking issue with introducing me to such an essential part of your organization. If I were you, I would keep me on a need-to-know basis."
"Yet that understanding of discretion is precisely why you should be brought in to further my machinations. We need capable men who understand the broader picture, who can make things happen when they know precisely what they can request."
"Then I have to present to you a bit of a double-edged sword. Kimon himself is alleged to be following our informant, who will arrive here soon."
"Kimon will be led here? And you failed to inform me of this? Perhaps I did misjudge you, Mr. Green."
"But here are the other edge. He seeks us, and we know he's watching our informant. Our informant is also well aware, so we'll be creating a decoy and offering him something to chase. On Luna Island, he'll be deprived of his powers and murdered, in summary. Our informant leading Kimon to this meeting will legitimize the information he's being fed and make him more likely to push forward. I apologize for not bringing this to your attention, but it was my assumption that my work would be compartmentalized."
"My feelings are deeply mixed. On the one hand, I am pleased to hear that Kimon will meet his end, though perhaps not for the last time, if past history is any indication. On the other, Captain Gwei operates as a civilian shipping captain, and you can tell he cannot very well hide. Kimon must not see him."
"Yes, I think perhaps I could find a solution. I go and I look for a tarp, and then I throw it over Captain Gwei."
If he were a normal human, this would probably be a terrible idea. But Captain Gwei reacts with all the patience of a tortoise and doesn't move at all as you throw a canvas tarp over him.
"Perfect. Now Kimon will be none the wiser."
Mercury says, "I suppose on short notice it will have to do. Captain Gwei, I order you not to move until I give the all clear." Captain Gwei complains, "I'm going to fall asleep under this tarp." Mercury says, "That's fine. You may sleep. I wasn't going to keep you around to talk to our spy. I only wanted to introduce you to Mr. Green. Job accomplished, though complicated." And in roughly 30 seconds, you can hear Captain Gwei snoring gently under the tarp.
"Seems a nice fellow."
"You've never heard him speak to his subordinates. At any rate, fill me in on the plan and all the essential details."
I run Mercury through the plan as far as Phil is going to understand it.
When you're done, Mercury says, "Very good. Should this plan succeed, you will redeem yourself for having led Kimon to one of my operations."
"You should assume all of your operations are compromised at this point. This talk of bringing in surface-to-air weaponry is a massive and unnecessary risk. You are likely being watched everywhere, and even if this meeting does not lead Kimon to understand what you are doing, you should assume another form of law enforcement is presently tightening the noose. I would advise that we not bring Luna to one of your strongholds directly. Rather, she should be moved to a neutral location not affiliated with your current work, then relocated once each and every escape route has been secured.
Nonsense! One strikes as the iron is hot, as they say. Of course, they are searching for me because I have been successful, and they know that they must stop me before I strike again. If I go to ground now, the metal will go cold.
Regardless, I would begin imagining what you will do if any one of your holdings here in New Jersey Delphia is targeted. Captain Gway here for one, and everything else.
Captain Gway only operates inside the city when he is visiting port. His missions are too essential to slow, and that is all I will hear. Luna will be taken to one of my strongholds. I will make preparations as such and inform you which one.
As you insist.
Well, it won't be long before Phil arrives, in theory. In fact, he shows up early. He knocks on the door, and Mercury instructs Howard to open the door. He invites Phil in, and Mercury declares,
"Greetings, Phil! I prepared a table just for you. I understand that you will solve two vexing problems for us at once, and I am thrilled to reward the success of both."
Phil says, yeah, but you should know I'm being followed by Kimon. It's part of the plan, but I assumed you wouldn't want him to show up here, so I did my best to lose him. I've been riding subway trains, going in and out of shops, even hired an Uber to drive me around for a bit.
Kimon may be superhuman, but if you went through all that, then I'm not sure even he could keep up.
Yeah, I didn't drive my own car either, so if there's a tracker on anything, nobody knows I'm here.
Did you turn your phone off?
Phil gets his phone out of his pocket, looks at it concernedly, and then turns it off.
That's fine. An interested party may find you were in the general vicinity, but you live near here, do you not?
Yeah, actually, I could have walked here in about 30 minutes. Mercury says,
"Still, we must be on our guard. Howard, tell some of the men to sweep the area. Look for Kimon or anyone loitering too suspiciously near the building. They needn't do anything rash. If they find someone, have them strike up small talk and make conversation. They won't be able to keep watch or listen in while being chattered at."
Howard leaves, passes the orders on to somebody nearby, presumably, then comes back and stands guard behind Mercury again. Mercury says,
"Now, Phil, Daryl told me that you yourself are one of the clever parties behind this plan. Please tell me what you've discussed."
And so Phil explains the plan to Mercury a second time, but he's clearly a bit nervous. Anytime Phil drops a detail or forgets something, Mercury helpfully suggests they do what it was you told him the plan was in the first place. Phil naturally agrees that's what he and Daryl thought was good, too. And then finally, Mercury says,
"I am most satisfied. I will begin setting aside an account and make arrangements to get you overseas. As soon as Luna enters my arms, you will find yourself in the arms of your topless island women."
Phil says, "Actually, I don't think there's any island that would do that." And for some reason, Howard replies, "No, there definitely is." And after, like, a second, everyone turns to Howard to see if he'll elaborate on that. He says, "Well, because you can do it in Vegas, so there's got to be an island. You could, not like a private island, but a place with, like, regular people that, like Vegas, that, I don't actually know." Thus explained, everyone turns back to Phil, and Mercury tries to remember what he was just saying.
As a note, paying a woman to be topless may be considered prostitution, or possibly workplace harassment if you're hiring a maid. The laws on that may limit your options in terms of destinations.
Mercury says, "Now, surely, Mr. Green, it cannot be against the law to have women be topless in your own home."
I believe in most countries anyone may go willingly topless in their own home, but there may be a line if you made it a precondition for employment for a maid, for example. Or come to think, if you wish to retain the services of house staff, requiring them to work in the presence of topless women might be considered grounds for legal action.
Phil says, well, I think Daryl was just making a joke. I wouldn't be mad about a topless woman in my house, but, like, now that we're thinking about it as a serious conversation, I could probably do without an angry topless maid who doesn't like me at all.
As a distant working relationship without much cheer to it, it would quickly lose its charm.
Mercury says, "Well, if she's going to be cantankerous about the job, why did she agree to it? I'm sure that we could place it in a contract so it's clear well ahead of the time."
Of course, the building is going to be air-conditioned to the comfort of a person wearing clothes, so she's going to be cold and uncomfortable. Less than a week in, she would regret everything.
"Well, just turn up the thermostat. We can find a way around this."
"And then what? The house would be sweltering."
"Well, then we can have Phil go topless as well."
And Phil says, I don't know if I want to be topless all the time.
See, that right there is exactly what your maid would say. I believe this entire scheme may be doomed.
The Luna Island raid because of a topless woman's insubordinance?
No, just the topless woman plan. We should scuttle the topless woman plan.
Nonsense! You think me the type of soul to accept capitulation? Phil, there is a price that a man must pay for anything he desires. You must go topless.
Phil says, but I don't want to go topless. Mercury replies,
I will not accept failure!
As a crucial point in Phil's favor, a topless woman and Phil are items of completely different value. No one, to the best of my knowledge, would pay Phil to take off his shirt.
You fool! This only reinforces my argument. Phil gives up less than she does for the benefit of her comfort. He still remains the victor.
But this is not an equal sacrifice. It's apples to oranges. Or in this case, more like a pancake to some fairly good oranges, I assume.
Phil says, I'm not that out of shape. Mercury cries,
that is why she is being given recompense, to pay for the inequality to which she is being subjected.
But there is where your judgment errs. You cannot merely pay for lost dignity or force someone into happiness by throwing money at them. You must speak to the soul and delight the heart. This is what we call romance.
You cannot romance your maid. That is sexual harassment, you blasted fool. You've created exactly the scenario that we fear.
Ha ha! So you would think. But now we are discussing the forbidden romance, a relationship between the superior and his subordinate. Both parties know it cannot be, but against everyone's better judgment, some women do go for it. Phil, I believe the road to your enchanting fantasy may still yet be attainable. It's merely become more elaborate.
Phil says, okay.
Mercury declares, no man alive outside the works of fiction has time for that.
Casanova would make time.
Casanova wasn't real!
From under the tarp, Captain Gway says, no, he was real.
Mercury yells, go back to sleep, Captain Gway!
Phil, all you need to do is make this fantasy be completely about the topless woman. And not about what you're interested in, but about her. As though she is the sun, and the planets that are your estate revolve around her. At first, she will be topless, and you will be unfamiliar, and that will be frightening. But then you can show her the art studio and say, oh, I've dabbled, but I've given up on it. But you can paint any time you like. And then she'll paint, and I guess she'll be topless while she does it, so that'll be fun. But when she's finished, you'll marvel at the painting. You know, not in a patronizing way. Find something that you actually like about it. Say what that is, then hang the paintings up on the wall, because you actually like them. And that will blossom into something. I don't know if you've ever written a romance novel written for women, but there is something there.
Phil says, well, but then don't I also need a friend who's kind of, like, available? But worse than me?
Of course, yes. She needs to feel as though she has options, so we'll need some kind of idiot friend. But the clear choice will be the man with the painting studio, obviously.
Enough! We will hire a woman to be topless and she will be pleased to be that way, or I will kill her and her entire family! As for Luna, I expect to find her delivered to me, or we will treat you the same, Phil. Have I made myself clear?
Phil says, yes, sir. I'll get the others on it and we will take care of it.
Mercury says, very good! Henceforward, you will be operating through Mr. Green. You are to do as he says in all things not pertaining to topless women.
Phil says, yes, sir.
Mercury says, then be gone.
Phil gets up and stumbles out of the room. When he leaves, Mercury turns to you, Paul, and he says,
what was that?
I simply thought a little finesse could get Phil to the point that he wanted.
By acting like a character from a woman's romance novel, the men in those may as well be stuffed with straw. The only thing going on in their lives is the woman in front of them, plus whatever hobbies the woman already has, if he's lucky. It's not a way to live.
Well, if we're going to live in the fantasy of objectifying women, I believe that if you want her to be happy, you have to allow the tables to turn.
What an unbelievable amount more work Phil would have to go through. She takes off her shirt, and then he's required to find something he genuinely likes about her dumbass water paintings?
I'm afraid, sir, that it usually works that way. Though in the opposite order, the shirt comes off second.
But then I suppose the woman would want to put her shirt back on afterward. Aren't the women usually in control at some level in those novels?
Yes, often there's some dramatic test for the man to uproot himself and all his expectations and do something for her benefit.
Why would you dare prescribe such a terrible existence for someone we're trying to reward?
If we're being rational, at some point, the both of them would get tired of the effort of fantasy and meet somewhere in the middle, live in reality. Or they'd give up and not bother at all.
Well, do let me know if that ever works for you. As I've established, you may request anything you need from Captain Gway, except for topless women from now on. You are banned from that. Beyond this, I believe business is concluded.
Your prize will be with you soon. Wearing a shirt. And now I must go change. I go back, change out of my villain clothes, then leave. After changing out of my disguise, go to the hotel and knock on Flux's door. Hello? Oh, yourself. You know, if you were in the field, you'd be harder to find.
Well, I'm recovering from a field-related injury.
I don't care. I need you to look up a captain of a shipping vessel for me.
And why would I do that for you?
Because it is your job to stop criminals, is it not?
You know, Kimon, this is the second time that I've been hit by your own son. And the second time I've had to see a doctor about it. And the second time, I should add that you didn't take any steps to prevent it before it happened.
I was on the other side of a building being shot at, which I noticed that you didn't prevent for me.
Because I was unconscious.
When in your life do you feel like you've ever been awake to notice anything?
Well, actually, Kimon, I feel like a lot of the jobs that we've done together get to be pretty eye-opening.
Are you solving any crimes right now, Elvis? Am I slowing you down? In your way? Would you like a new lead?
I'll take it. But I think we'd make a lot more progress if we had someone in the field who could actually work with people.
Yeah, well, I'm the whole field team right now as far as the Mercury case matters. So suck it up or get nothing. Can you find a person named Captain Gui?
I could look up Captain Gui. But why can't Light Show take over?
The Mercury investigation?
Yeah, how about he does the stuff that requires you to work with me, and then you take over his patrols?
I'd tell you, but he'd probably rather you take it up with him.
Whatever.
Elvis, you go to look up a Captain Gui, and it's not any real trouble at all. First of all, he's a giant turtle man, which makes him very easy to pick out of any number of photos. And second, he has dozens of red flag connections to all sorts of things that you'd regard as hostile to the United States. In fact, it's flat out weird that you don't bring up criminal records on the guy. He's totally spotless on that front, which you'd assume, based on his background, is utterly fake. But how would you create a fake identity for a turtle person to begin with? And if you did, why would you not try to hide all those shady connections he has at a glance?
Okay, so you found basically a turtle with the words, "I am a spy," tattooed on his shell.
Yeah, pretty impressive. Are you impressed?
Why him? I mean, aside from all the obvious stuff.
You know, if you did any actual field work, you'd know how I did it. But the short answer is that I dressed up as a little old lady and fed birds in a bad part of town while people talked around me.
I don't believe that for a second.
Might not be how I got this information, but if you think I've never dressed up as an old lady, you'll be shocked to learn that you're wrong. Can you pull up that boat he's in charge of when it's scheduled to leave port next?
I'll see what I can do.
You almost can't argue, and apparently neither can the authorities who searched his vessel and shaken this guy down numerous times without discovering much of anything. But still, the legal stuff is there to look up, and so you get to it.